Welcome to the Dynasty Guru Podcast, Episode 8. We're joined today by Tyler Baber, Brett Sayre, and I'm your host, Tom Trudeau. Guys, this is Top 500 week. We actually have two Top 500 lists on their site. Excited to talk about both today. And with that in mind, I'm going to hand over the reins to Tyler because one of those lists was created by yours truly. And look forward to being able to defend some of those rankings. I think what you'll find over the next half an hour or so is that Brett's rigor far exceeds mine. Once we get into the 300s and you start asking me why I ranked one guy one spot over the next, I'm just going to tell you, dude, I don't know, like a month ago I did some research and it felt right, and we'll leave it at that. So without further ado, Tyler, take it away.
All right, I want to start with maybe the most obvious point of contention, the one that, Tom, you bring up in your intro as one of the most obvious differences, which is Gary Sanchez. We've heard, Tom, on the catcher episode, how high you are on Sanchez. And Brett, people are well familiar with your opinions on Sanchez as well, if they're reading you in corners of the internet. But you guys have them ranked about 29 spots apart. He's your first catcher, Tom, at 28, and in the 50s for you, Brett. So, Tom, why don't you tell Brett why he's wrong?
Well, I don't think he's wrong. I do think that Sanchez starts a trend throughout these lists where we're seeing the same information and we're just interpreting it a little bit differently. For me, where I'm going to be more aggressive than most dynasty rankers and dynasty players is on very good prospects who've also succeeded in the majors. So I'm not necessarily going to go gaga over every kid. I don't think I'm ageist per se, but if you are someone like Gary Sanchez or Andrew Benintendi, who the scouts think are really good, the numbers say are really good, the age-adjusted production is really good, the pedigree is there, the draft pedigree, the signing bonus pedigree, the production in the minors, and then they come to the major leagues and they produce such that even skeptical projection models are very keen on these players. For example, a lot of our readers, I'm sure, use the FanGraphs auction tool, and were you to plug in a pretty standard 15-team league, you'll see that Gary Sanchez is right next to Buster Posey. And for me, I'm not by ranking Sanchez higher, I'm not necessarily saying that he's the safer dynasty asset, even for 2017, but rather Posey isn't better enough to bridge that 7-8 year gap. And one last thing, and before I see to Brett, that I'll mention is that there is risk with kids and unproven players, but there's also risk with veterans. I think that's best borne out by the consensus shortstop lists last year, which had Tulowitzki ahead of Seager and Lindor. And I guess for my rankings, I'm just hoping that the Gary Sanchez and Benintendis are more Seager and Lindor and less Puig and Jorge Soler.
Yeah, those are fair names to throw out there. The question to me is what Sanchez is, and what Sanchez is he's got power. We know this. He will probably hit 25 plus home runs this year, but I don't think that we have any sense that he is that he has a great ability to hit for average. I think it's perfectly realistic based on what we've seen so far that he's a 250 to 260 hitter with, 25 plus home runs. And that's really good as a catcher. And that's why I have him in the top 50. But, I think we know a little bit more about some of the other players, and, Sanchez's sample size was, he was so good, but it was such a small sample size that I'm not ready to take that plunge, especially with a catcher, and part of, to be honest, part of, I think, the difference between Tom and my ranking of Sanchez has to do with how we view catchers in general. I hate catchers, period. I don't like them. I don't trust them. I don't want to invest too heavily in someone who will catch all the time. If they get injured, they don't play enough games. There's a lot of risk inherent in the position. And you know, I think it's sort of a combination of both of those things as to why I have him where he is. I mean, that said, I have him as the second ranked catcher in Dynasty League, so it's not like I dislike him or think he's gonna fall off the face of the earth. But he's a fun guy to watch regardless.
Brett, can I ask one follow up question before we move on?
You may.
If Sanchez hits his steamer projection, which is 268, 329, 491, that's a 118 WRC plus with 27 home runs. Forget the steals. They're giving him 6 for some reason. Let's say he doesn't get any. If he does that, is he your number one catcher next year?
If he hits, well, how many home runs is it?
27 home runs and 268 batting average in 122 games.
I'm going to hedge the answer. Yes, unless Kyle Schwarber catches 20 games.
That's a very Brett answer. All right, so going to the other side of the list, one of the harshest disparities between your two lists is Colton Wong, who Brett has ranked number 216, a very sexy number. I'm sure all the other middle infielders around him are equally enticing. And Tom, you have basically barely squeaking into your list at 448 overall. So Brett, what's the value of the middle of the list in the top 500? What's the actual cliff? How far is it between 216 and 448 for a player like Colton Wong?
I mean, it's noticeable, but I mean, as you look at the names as you go on down, I mean, it's nowhere near. As a good point of exercise, you know, I'd say roughly that the difference between player number 100 on a list like this and player number 215 is about the same as the difference between player number 215 and someone who is borderline to make the list entirely. Once it really just spreads out as the list gets lower down, you know, like Tom was alluding to before, I mean, you could make an argument for probably close to 650 players to squeeze onto a list like this, and none of them would be wrong. It gets to the point where it depends how you value certain types of players, how you value veterans, how you value 18-year-olds in rookie ball. It really just comes down to sort of personal playing preference. Which is hard, and I've been doing this for a while, and it's hard to squeeze out all of the personal playing preference. I try to be as agnostic as I can and try to, you know, get to sort of the center of these players' values, but it's impossible to completely separate that out. You know, I talked about the thing with catchers. I mean, I am not going to have catchers ranked as highly as other people. I'm not going to have relievers ranked as highly as other people. Some of that is where that falls on a pure value standpoint. But, you know, some of it is also how I tend to play in dynasty leagues.
The question was about Colton Wong.
That makes me want to ask you about your Greg Holland ranking from 2 years ago, but I'm not going to. I do want to ask, that kind of segues into, I think, the question that the most popular commenters want to know, which is, what do you have against Jarrell Cotton, Brett?
I don't understand why people like Cotton. He's so boring and probably not any good in mixed leagues. He's probably waiver wire fodder. I know he's got a changeup and, you know, his whip might not be terrible, but he's not good. He's just like about, you know, 50 other guys who could be fourth starters. He's the same as Jake Thompson. He's the same as Matt Whistler. He's the same as the difference between those two guys is they've had an extended period and they weren't super successful at the start. So everyone just assumes that they can't do it. You know, not having Cotton on the last 100 of the list is not really it's not really so much an indictment on Cotton, because I don't think anybody thinks he's great, but it's more of a belief in some of the other people who I think other owners have unnecessarily given up on.
Brett, do you think Cotton will be an interesting case study on production versus scouting pedigree. The thing I like about him, by the way, the swinging strike rate in a small sample, and especially Oakland. I think that Brett mentioned a bunch of legitimate fourth and fifth starters, and I didn't hear anybody who's in the favorable situation that he is in Oakland. But Cotton is a guy who in the minor leagues was pretty good for a number of years, but never really showed up in anyone's radar just because he was a little bit older for each level and didn't necessarily have the big stuff. So I'm curious to see how he pans out as just another case study on that pedigree, on that scout's pedigree versus production.
Yeah, you can make a case study out of him a different way too, which is that when pitchers have meh stuff but a really good changeup, like Cotton has, minor leaguers can make you look really good. This is the Edward Cabrera corollary. you can kind of, if you have pretty good command and a good changeup, you can kind of tear through the minors. Major league hitters, I think we're going to find, are not as friendly to Cotton and pitchers like him at the highest level.
So, not talking about Cotton anymore. I think we've given him enough. Although I did hear Brett, basically what you're saying is East Coast bias.
Definitely.
Another player that you guys are pretty starkly different on in terms of ranking, especially like with looking at Tom's top 100-ish compared to Brett's. Tom, you have Ozzie Albies ranked just outside your top 100. He's just outside Brett's 250, which is a pretty major difference. So, Tom, we've heard about your favoring youth and looking at prospect pedigree. What is it about Albies particularly that makes you bullish on him and putting him within that top 100 range?
Well, first of all, it doesn't feel good to be on an island with any one rank. And we have the benefit of talking to a lot of really good dynasty players. And I'm the high guy on Ozzie Albies. And I can certainly point to the reasons that I like him more than most. He has two carrying fantasy tools in his batting average and speed. He has the age-adjusted production that might allow for a sudden breakout, maybe in the manner of a Francisco Lindor. I'm not saying he will be Francisco Lindor. He certainly has the opportunity in Atlanta. And he also has a lot of buzz among the insiders that I like to talk to. That's maybe last or definitely last on my list of why I like him better. But overall, I do wonder why I'm seeing the same information and coming up with such a different opinion on the player. So curious to hear what Brett does not like about him besides maybe those small ISOs.
It's not that there's anything inherently that I don't like in him. I just don't see as much fantasy upside as I think you do. I don't think it's a given that he's going to be a 300 hitter in the majors. I think, you know, it's just as likely he'll be a, you know, 270, 280 hitter, which is good. And, you know, he'll offer speed, but he's not going to be a 50 steal guy. He might not, you know, he might not even be a 30 steal guy. I mean, he stole 29 bases in 2015. He stole 30 bases in 2016. Wasn't super successful on the base paths in either. It's not a profile that's ever going to develop power. He's not, you know, he's not going to follow sort of the Francisco Lindor into the teens power. Like, and you know, Lindor, I think at this point, I think everyone is in agreement that he could conceivably be a 15 to 20 homer guy, which is a big deal. You know, Albies is about 5'8", like 120 pounds. He's not going to hit double digit home runs. He's also probably going to, you know, the best case scenario with a profile like him is that he hits at the top of the lineup and really doesn't get any RBI. Worst case scenario is that he's not a particularly great hitter for average and he hits towards the bottom of the lineup and really has no counting stats. So you know, he has strong fundamental tools in batting average and steals, but I don't think either of them project to be elite. And there's just too much to kind of meh in the profile overall for me to push him much higher than that. And, you know, that said, I think he's a good dynasty league asset. I think he's going to get a shot this year, and I think he's going to, you know, I think he's going to do pretty well with it. But I think expecting him to be a top 10, well, he'll probably be a second baseman. Offensive bar is a little bit higher there, but expecting him to be a top 10 second baseman is going to be pretty tough unless he is a 310, 320 hitter.
See, I do see a little bit more power potential, and to me the biggest reason is I think people discount just how young he is and how young he's been at each level. And to just say that he's tapped out physically, I don't necessarily agree with. I'm not saying that it's a 20 home run bat, but if the bar is to get to double digit home runs, I think he can do that. Brett rattled off some of his stolen base totals, and maybe this will be another ding, which is that the health hasn't been incredible in his tenure, but most of those stolen base totals were in short seasons. So I do think he is comfortably a 30 steal, 10 home run second baseman into the future. And I think that is a top 10 second baseman. And then you bring the batting average into the play, and that's how you start to flirt with real impact value.
So looking at some of the players who are in Brett's top 100 and outside of yours, you guys are fairly close, but there's one player that Brett has within the top 50 and Tom, you have outside of your top 100, and that's Daniel Murphy. So Brett, how much of that is just based on the fact that Daniel Murphy was at one time a Met?
All of it.
Okay. Next question. No, so Tom, when you see a player who's so clearly turned a corner like Murphy, even though he is older, how much of his age is the only reason that he's outside of your top 50?
No, so I think Daniel Murphy is really interesting. This is the Statcast era we're living in, and it seems like he or someone around him mentioned the words launch angle, and he was like, oh, if I swing at a slightly higher angle, balls go higher, balls go further. And he had a career high home run total, as did everybody in the majors last year. Still, I can't get past the fact that in two of the last three seasons, he was not really an impact player at all. So to rank a nearly 32-year-old any higher than I did, I'm just not comfortable doing. I think it's the that veteran risk that I mentioned with Tulowitzki, where you're paying for that past production and it could fall off, and all of a sudden he's just a guy when you could have had something maybe riskier like an Albies that I expect to be better into the future.
All yeah, right. You can say that, but Murphy is a completely different player than he was 2 years ago. And sometimes stuff like this gets overstated, but in his case, it is not. I mean, we saw this happen. Like he's a different type of player. We saw this happen with Jose Bautista a couple of years back. And he was sort of a lingering, not particularly useful fantasy player, and made a swing and approach change, became a completely different hitter, and just completely stumped projection systems for the better part of a couple of years. Having watched Murphy a lot, I do think that this isn't his ceiling. Ranking him inside the top 50 is not his ceiling. He is a guy who could legitimately be a top 10, top 15 player next year. He's always been a good natural hitter. Now he's a good natural hitter with loft, and he's playing for the Nationals, which are a really good lineup. Dusty Baker lets people run a little bit more than they should, so he can even pick up a couple of steals. But the batting average and the power, I think, is completely real.
So I want to get into sort of a lightning round in a little bit, but Before we do that, I mean, one of the challenges I think people, readers have, and maybe even you guys making lists have, in pulling together a list of this depth and this widespread in terms of, like, covering every position and ranking players against, you know, relievers in line with 18-year-old prospects right outside of, you know, veterans who are a year from retirement. When you're putting together a list like this, and if someone's reading it or comparing your list together, do you think that what I get from the list in terms of value as a reader should be different if I'm in a drafting for a first-year Dynasty League compared to using it as a metric to evaluate potential trades?
So for me, the first-year player draft is it's an entirely different animal. I think Brett and I probably both make these rankings in a vacuum, and I'll let Brett speak to that. But in a first year player draft, I want to be consistent. And if that means going for it, then I want to be more aggressive with guys like Daniel Murphy. Meanwhile, if you want to have a young team, be the youngest team in the league, and that means going off this list a little bit and taking maybe riskier younger kids sooner than I have them ranked. So I do think that it context matters, and certainly, you know, you mentioned the maturity of the league, especially the size of the league. The deeper the league, you want to go a little bit safer and move away from the kids. And the more shallow the league, the deeper the league, I actually care more about getting playing time. I think like an Orlando Arcia or Manuel Margot, guys who are considered better real life players in certain circles. I actually like those guys because I know they're going to be on the field. And in the shallower leagues, that's when you go veteran heavy.
I kind of sit down to do this. I think Tom and I have a little bit of a different strategy in terms of initial Dynasty League drafts. So I do kind of try to keep that in mind more than anything else, is where if I had no clue what my contention cycle was going to be, or what my team was going to look like, or what my farm system was going to look like, where would I have these players ranked? So they really, in my opinion, my list is really most useful for an initial dynasty draft. It is a good tool to use for trades, but you get into situations where, rankings are in the eye of the beholder, even when the baseline value is just about the same. You could look at the list as a contending team and see it completely differently than looking at it as a non-contending team. So, I mean, we, just to give some examples, we have, I'm trying to find two guys that are pretty similar in spot to each other.
You guys both have Colin McHugh ranked at the exact same spot at 369.
That's terrifying. So yeah. But here's a decent example. So John Lester and Ahmed Rosario, they're in similar enough places on our lists. If you are a contending team, and I actually was just talking to someone, I think on Twitter, about this exact trade. If you're a contending team and you could use a pitcher, you know, you would deal Rosario for Lester. If you were a rebuilding team and you weren't going to contend the next year or two, you'd absolutely deal Lester for Rosario. So it's about finding where your team is and interpreting the list based on that. Once you're actually in play, the only way to put this together is to try to visualize a blank slate.
Okay, so I want to do a quick lightning round. Basically, I'm looking at both of your lists and looking at the back 100 for each of you. I'm going to ask each of you a player that if your list went to 600,
would you have included this player on your list? So, Tom, that means I'm asking you players that you left off that Brett has ranked, and vice versa for you, Brett. So, Brett, let's start with you. Tom has, if I go to the right list, actually, yeah, hang on a second, sorry. All right, so we talked about Jarrell Cotton, so we'll skip him. If this list went to 600, Brett, about where would you rank Brady Aiken?
I wouldn't have him on. I've gotten...
Lightning round, Brett. We're doing lightning round the real way on this podcast. One word and then you're done.
Yeah, I know. But, so are we alternating, or are you just asking me all these questions?
I'm asking you because you're going to secretly depart, and then I'll ask Tom some of these questions.
Sounds good. So no on Aiken, yes on Valencia.
Trace Thompson.
And Valencia would be pretty close. Valencia would probably be in the next 10 to 15 names.
Okay. Trace Thompson.
Yeah, but barely.
Luis Urias.
Yeah, probably in the 550 to 575 range.
Yadier Molina.
No.
Oh, shots fired. Cornelius Randolph.
Yes.
Michael Geddes.
Yes.
Where would a player like Michael Geddes get ranked if he was in the next?
He's pretty close. I mean, I think there's probably only about a 5% chance he's ever usable in a fantasy lineup, but if he is, then he could be awesome.
Yucheng Chang.
No.
Steve Pierce.
Yes.
Arodis Vizcaino.
No.
Did I say Cornelius Randolph?
You did, and I said yes.
All right. Yes. All right. And Kristen Stewart.
Ugh, you and Kristen Stewart. I probably, but it would be towards the back end.
Tom, were there any names you had for Brett that you're like, come on, man, why was this guy not on your list?
I was a little bit surprised about Brady Aiken, just because at that point, you know, you want those high variance, risky guys that have upside. So to hear that he's not even among your top 600, it is surprising.
Yeah, I have heard bad things.
Yeah, I think high variance requires regaining some velocity at some point in your life.
Yeah.
So Tom, same sort of deal for you. These are players that Brett has ranked, and you either don't, or I ranked my spreadsheet wrong. So if you had him in your top 600, where would you put Michael Saunders?
Yeah, he belongs right outside of top 500. He's usable in like a 15 team league, and he's easily a fringe top 500 guy.
What about Yan Gomes?
Don't care about Yan Gomes, and the Indians are desperately trying to upgrade on Yan Gomes.
Forrest Whitley is a young variance guy.
Yeah, easily yes. He could have been in my top 500.
Robert Stevenson. Is that right? Did you have Robert Stevenson ranked, Brett? What are you doing?
I did.
Yeah, I mean, look, you'll know, yes, because he's the kind of guy where you'll know quickly whether he's worth hanging on to, and maybe, you know, maybe that big fastball turns into something.
Yeah, I got to say, Tom, your list, I know your answers to a lot more of these than I thought I did. All right, Hunter Dozier.
Yeah, he would rank in my top 50 for top 600 for a similar reason. We'll know pretty soon if he's quad A or major league bound.
All right, here's one that I'm interested in your answer. Darian Cruz.
Maybe. I was looking at him today for the top 200 dynasty prospects, and he actually did not make my top 200 dynasty prospects. So he's pretty fringy for me.
Hmm. Matt Whistler.
Don't care about Matt Whistler.
But you care about Jarrell Cotton.
Yeah, well, Jarrell Cotton has gotten outs in the majors.
He's gotten like 5 outs in the majors.
So has Matt Whistler in a lot more inning. That made no sense.
Whistler has gotten more outs. That's true. Whistler's also almost a full year younger than Cotton.
What gives you hope for Whistler?
Not much, but nothing really gives me hope for Cotton.
It's a devil. The devil
it's
you
a,
know.
It's a back end starter conundrum. It's just literally you could throw darts with these guys who might be back end starters.
Somebody has to be number 500. We know it's going to be a back end starter, so it's just a matter of picking one, right?
That's true. It was actually it was going to be somebody else, and then I forgot Neil Walker on my first draft by accident. I think I accidentally deleted over him.
You know, Tyler, while you're talking about top 600 names that no one cares about, I want to deliver some insight to our listeners. I think they'd be interested to hear. So I have the pleasure in playing in not one but two dynasty leagues with Brett, and I can say that if you offer him a player who is higher on his list, he tends to not accept that player, that trade, unless it's Jurickson and Profar, and he's inclined to take it.
What if it's Dom Smith? Because he already owned Dom Smith in all those formats.
Yeah, he probably already owned Dom Smith.
I don't think I actually own him in any leagues anymore.
So your master plan of like making everyone think that Dom Smith was going to be a big deal and then trading him worked out well.
This was literally the only reason why I got into fantasy baseball already.
All right, well, the secret's out. Thanks, everyone, for listening through. I would love to keep talking about Walker Buehler, who is going to be my next name, but that's mostly just to be able to say the name. So, Tom, any other insights that we should know?
I think it's interesting that Brett and I both had Raimel Tapia as high as we did. He's not someone who's high on top 100 proper lists that aren't fantasy specific, and he's not as popular on the consensus dynasty prospect rankings that we're working on internally now, hopefully for release in the next week or two. So it sounds like both of us are higher on him than most. For me, just the hit tool, the fantasy friendly skills, the speed and cores.
Yeah.
And I also found it interesting that both of you have Carlos Carrasco ranked 69th overall, which is a very nice note to end on. I guess since I've got the keys, I'll wrap up. You can find Brett at Brett Sayer BP, not at Dynasty Guru anymore.
Boo.
And Tom and Brett, where else can people find you?
I'm at Tom Trudeau, and the official Dynasty Guru Twitter handle is at Dynasty Guru, and in the club.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, Brett. I sort of failed that transition. Where else can people find you on the web?
Oh, people can find me at baseballprospectus.com.
I want to get Tyler. You're an American hero for not saying the interwebs like every other podcaster would have. Good for you, Tyler.
I mean, now it's like it feels like it's on purpose. I just am an adult. also follow the Dynasty Guru on Facebook. A lot of this conversation can continue there. You're also free to continue posting about why Jarrell Cotton was left off the list on Brett's post at thedynastyguru.com.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thanks for having me.